Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the call and talk show about health and natural medicine. It's March 6, 2019. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. I'm here flying solo because Ron is off to the sun again. If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. That's radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch ND. So today I thought I'd talk about menopause because why not? I'm sure there are a bunch of you that are out there listening, men and women, who are interested in what one can do about what it feels like to be in menopause. You know, as I'm soldiering on through it, I have my own experiences and my own ideas and, you know, stuff that I do. And menopause is always a topic that's worth coming back to because it's big. And, you know, as a tail end of baby boomer, I'm going to be going through it for a while because, you know, at 55, I feel pretty fit and healthy. So I think I have a pretty good amount of life left in me. I'm looking at my mom, who's pushing 80, and also very fit and healthy. So, like I said, I have a few good years left in me, and a lot of my life is going to be spent in menopause. When I think about it, you know, I first started menstruating at 11, and I stopped at 51, so that was 40 years, and it's quite possible that I will live for 40 years from my menopause. So I will spend, well, more time in my life not menstruating than menstruating. Isn't that interesting? Because, of course, from age 0 to 11, I did not. And then I'll have those 40 if I, God willing, I live to 90 or 100. I will spend more time not doing it than doing it. And it's kind of a weird thing because you just sort of, in terms of having supplies around, you know, making sure that you have tampons stashed or that you're carrying them with you and pads and stuff and wondering if it's going to happen at any point. You forget that that's even a thing, and it's not like you feel like an old lady. It's just no longer a concern. You just don't even think, oh, yeah, I'm not that. That just doesn't happen anymore. You're not waiting for it. You're not looking for it. You don't get PMS. It's just all gone. It's really interesting. So the thing is, before we, you know, before we talk about what to do about how to make you feel better while you're in your menopause, we should talk about what it feels like to be in it. You know, so when you first get there, before you get there, you start to have symptoms and you may, and women are different as to what happens with them. But usually, so the normal age for menopause is somewhere between 40 and 55. You know, some women can have their menopause a little bit earlier and some can go as late as their high 50s. But the general age is somewhere, normal menopause is considered to be age 40 to 55. And the definition of menopause is considered to be cessation of menstruation, you know, due to no longer ovulating, and the cessation has happened for at least a year. And that's considered menopause. And so if you miss a few periods, say you miss periods for 3 months and then you get it again, you're not quite there yet. And what's happening is you're running out of eggs. When you no longer ovulate, you no longer set off the cycle that causes the whole menstrual cycle, the buildup of the lining of your uterus and the subsequent changes in hormones. And then whether you get pregnant or if you don't, the changes in the hormones that allow you to release the lining of your uterus, which is your menses. And so as you're approaching menopause, you don't have as many eggs as you used to, and you start to have anovulatory cycles. And in fact, you can start having anovulatory cycles in your 30s. And so if you have a cycle where either your period is much lighter or it comes earlier or it comes later, or you have an extra heavy period, those can be anovulatory cycles. Of course, if you have a cycle where you don't feel like you ovulated, where you don't notice the signs of ovulation, for example, an increase in sex drive, an increase in egg white texture and egg white looking discharge. If you don't have any of those symptoms, and some women get Mittelschmerz, they get some pain in the middle of their cycle from the egg releasing and the release of a little tiny bit of blood into the peritoneal cavity which is irritating and causes some pain and inflammation. And so Mittelschmerz is something that can happen. Mittelschmerz, German word for middle pain. That's what it means. So Schmerz means pain in German. Now you know. So anyway, if you may have a cycle where you don't feel that, and you may not have ovulated. And when you don't ovulate, you don't have the signaling of the hormones from the egg. The egg makes estrogen. And the corpus luteum makes progesterone, and progesterone gives you a nice healthy lining that's suitable for implantation of an egg. Well, if you don't have the benefit of that progesterone, your lining is not necessarily going to hold together as well. And you can get a decent lining, but because it doesn't hold together when you finally get your period, you get a very heavy period. It can go the other way too, because of the lack of progesterone, you don't get much of a lining at all. And so when you finally do get your period, there's not much to it. So that can happen too. And sometimes you barely build up a lining at all. And what your experience is, you don't even have a period. So that all of those things can happen in the time leading up to your menopause. And the other thing is, menopause isn't just a gentle slope down to not having your period. What happens is your pituitary gland notices that your eggs are not working, that your ovary is not responding like it used to. So what it does is it increases the hormones from the pituitary gland that signal the ovary to get going. So it increases the amount of FSH, follicle stimulating hormone, and also ultimately increases the amount of LH, luteinizing hormone. So follicle stimulating hormone stimulates the cells, the follicles that are going to develop into a possible egg. And then luteinizing hormone, mid-cycle, stimulates a particular egg to ripen. And the first one to ripen gets to be the ovum that's going to control your period for that cycle. So because the ovaries are not responding, your FSH and LH levels go way up. And so there's various thoughts on what's going on in terms of the symptoms of menopause. And some of the symptoms are thought to be because of that real high FSH and LH. And one way you know that a woman is in menopause is you can do blood tests and see how high her FSH and LH are. And what's interesting is if you're menopausal and you're not taking hormones, your FSH and your LH may remain high. I'm not sure exactly why, but that's what the pituitary gland decides to do. And the other interesting thing is your hypothalamus gets in the mix. Your hypothalamus controls your pituitary gland. It stimulates the hormones that the pituitary gland lets out. And because your hypothalamus is in the mix, one of the things the hypothalamus does is control your body temperature. So one of the things that's happening is your estrogen levels are going down because your ovaries are not producing as much and your eggs are not producing as much. And when your hypothalamus doesn't get its estrogen, it gets confused. And it does weird things in terms of your temperature regulation. And so you tend to get your hot flashes. So the interesting thing is that stress hormones will affect that too. So if your body feels like it's under stress, your hypothalamus is going to stimulate it stimulates a hormone that causes your pituitary to make ACTH, adrenocorticotropic hormone, which then stimulates your adrenals to make things like cortisol and epinephrine and stuff like that. So you have a hormone at the back end, at the hypothalamic level, that controls whether you make cortisol. So it gets confused too. And if you're under stress and you're making that, when you have more stress hormones also affect your body temperature regulation. So if you got stress going on and menopause at the same time, you're going to tend to get more hot flashes. And so the less stressed you are, the less hot flashes. And I find for me that hot flashes can happen with ongoing stress. So I remember, the year before my father died, I was 52 years old, and I had stopped my periods at 51. And the year before that happened, my hot flashes happened, but they started to mellow out. And then after my father died, they came back in force. It wasn't fun. And now they've started to mellow out some again. I do find that I'm more likely to get hot flashes again if I'm stressed in general. Of course, if I sleep hot, I'm more likely to get night sweats than I am to get hot flashes overall. So I have to sleep a little on the cool side. I have to wear less clothes than I used to. If I have a ceiling fan, so much better. So women, if you find that you sweat a lot at night and you don't have a ceiling fan or some kind of a fan going on you, get that set up. The ceiling fan, I find, is the best because it's driving the, if you have the ceiling fan right over the bed, it's driving the air right over you where you need it, and you're going to get less hot flashes. And I don't have a ceiling fan in my house, but when I go visit my mother or my sister, there are ceiling fans in the rooms where I stay there, and it's awesome. And if you have to get a box fan and keep it next to the bed, if you don't have a ceiling fan until you get that ceiling fan placed, that can be helpful too. Or even if you have a table with a little fan on it, just blowing air on you, that can be helpful. And if you can manage to open the window, of course, that helps too. Of course, opening the window when it's 11 degrees might not be the best thing in the world. So you're left with the fan situation. So the things that people come in for, the biggest symptoms I see people coming in for are hot flashes, of course, because they're uncomfortable. And, you know, if they happen when you're in the middle of your life, they can be, you know, embarrassing. I mean, I don't get embarrassed because what do I care? I'm sweating. So what? And if you get a hot flash and you're in the middle of life, don't worry about it. It's what happens. It's okay. And if you get a hot flash around a fellow woman who's going through menopause, she's going to try to help you. So if she has a fan, she's going to fan you. And so that's the other thing you might want to do is you might want to carry just a little hand fan. And you can get those inexpensively, various places. But carry a hand fan and fan yourself. And carry a little spray bottle with some water and peppermint essential oil so you can spray your face. It's so refreshing and it smells really good. And it's nice and cooling. So if you get it, and then, you know, hot flashes, power surges, you're going to get them. So what? And women around you, menopausal women around you, are going to have compassion for you. So, you know, don't even, if you are embarrassed, I get it. But I'm just letting you know to explore the idea of not being embarrassed and just owning it. It's what happens. And it happens to everyone. Well, actually, it doesn't happen to everyone. It happens to 75% of women. So it happens to most women in industrialized society. Of course, if you live in a society where they have very low stress and good genes in, going in that direction, they don't get hot flashes. And so there, a long time ago, somebody did a study on Mayan women, and they found that Mayan women who were living a traditional Mayan lifestyle, no hot flashes. Just one day they stopped their periods and that's that. And they asked them all kinds of questions to the point where the Mayans got concerned and said, is there something we should be concerned about? And because they just didn't get the symptoms. So you too can manage your hot flashes. And one of the ways to do it is to lower stress. I know, easier said than done, right? Because you're thinking, well, I'm still in my life. I'm still taking care of my teenagers. I'm still driving to work. I still have all these things going on. How the heck am I going to reduce my stress? And I say, you know, good point. And there may be only so much you can do. So I want to shout out to you just because I'm giving you suggestions about how to lower your stress. I get that it's at times it's just not going to be possible. So shout out to all y'all who are out there in your lives doing hard stuff. And, you know, the stress just isn't going anywhere anytime soon. So what you have to do is you have to find those times when you have a little time to chill out. And it could be a few minutes in a day. It could be an hour in a day. It could be a day in a week. It could be a couple of hours at some point during the week. But it is important to find that time that's good for you, that you can have your own time to chill out. Things that you can do in the moment if you're in the middle of giving a lecture and you suddenly have a hot flash, which can totally happen because, believe me, it just can. Or, you know, my favorite, when I'm sitting with a patient, I'm sitting there and then I get a hot flash. Of course, when I'm with a patient, I can make it funny. And I have hand fans sitting on my desk. So I just fan myself. I say, oh, I'm having a hot flash. And, you know, patient, especially if the woman is, you know, at least 40, she's sympathetic. And in general, they, you know, people tend to be sympathetic because if you're owning it and you're laughing about it, no worries. But it is going to happen sometimes. And things you can do acutely to reduce stress can help. And the first thing to do is to see if you can calm yourself, be still, and take deep breaths. When you slow your breathing down and you do deep breathing, and you know, it doesn't have to be meditation. Does if you want to do, if you want to meditate, if you want to say a mantra, if you want to pray, you can do that, especially if that helps you to reduce your stress. But simple deep breathing slows your heart rate, it interrupts your sympathetic nervous system, your fight or flight system, and it reduces stress. It reduces your cortisol levels immediately. So if you can just sit and take deep breaths, that's the first thing to do, just wherever you are, because you can take a deep breath wherever you are. If you can do it and think happy thoughts, that can abort a hot flash. And usually hot flashes go away. And of course, women have different levels of hot flashes. Some women merely get warm and they sweat a little bit on their face. And some women drench through their clothes. And there's every, you know, level in between. And some days you might drench your clothes and some days you might just get a little, you know, glow on your face. I'm lucky enough that I'm of the little bit of glow situation. Of course, if it's very hot, I'm going to sweat anyway. I think that one of the reasons I manage my hot flashes is because I do get exercise. So I'm no stranger to sweat. I'm used to sweating a lot during exercise. And that is one way you can get your hot flashes to be more manageable, is to get regular exercise. That if your body is in the habit of temperature regulating because you're pushing your body all the time, when you're sitting still and you start to sweat, the sweat may not be as intense. Exercise can definitely be something to mellow out your hot flashes. Of course, if you exercise regularly, it reduces your stress as well. Things that stress your system. So what's going on here is when you get the hot flashes, they think it's because... there's some theory. Some think that that amount of luteinizing hormone does something to your temperature regulation, and that gives you a hot flash. And the other piece is when, as I said, when your estrogen is lower, it confuses your hypothalamus. So your hypothalamus does weirdness on your temperature regulation. So both of those things could be going on. So when your estrogen tends to be low, you're going to tend to get more hot flashes. Now, if you are burning up to your menopause, like you're not in menopause yet, but you're missing periods and you're having an ovulatory cycles, what goes on is you'll have your ovary being sleepy. It's not paying attention to the FSH and the LH that are coming out. And then one day it goes, all right, already. And and a whole bunch of follicles develop all at once. And all of a sudden you're estrogen dominant and you may or may not ovulate. So you don't get that relief from the progesterone, because when you ovulate, the egg that decides to do the ovulating, it splits and it leaves the corpus luteum back at your ovary to make progesterone for you. And the other part of it goes to become future potential baby. When you ovulate, you get relief from those high estrogen symptoms, the bloating, the irritability, swelling, all of the symptoms you get from high estrogen, that can tend to improve when you start releasing progesterone. And so for some women, when it's intolerable, we give them natural progesterone to take, or at least herbs that help with help to stimulate progesterone receptors. But that lack of progesterone is the first hormone to tank, and progesterone makes you feel calm. It makes you feel good. It's anti-inflammatory, does a lot of nice things for you. And it's the first hormone, unfortunately, to tank. Unfortunately, we lose our progesterone. We don't feel as well. The symptoms I see, as I said, a lot of times we see hot flashes. People come in for hot flashes because they can be annoying, to sleep interrupting, to intolerable day or night. So that's a symptom that we see. The other that we see is vaginal dryness. People come in for vaginal dryness because the big thing is they can't enjoy sex, that sex starts to hurt because they lose elasticity to the vagina and it's uncomfortable. And, you know, one of the things that I hear is that during intercourse, people can feel like it's rubbing sandpaper. And so it's very uncomfortable. And they come in first because they're having discomfort during intercourse, and then they come in later because they're just having, it hurts to walk, it hurts to move, and if it gets bad enough. And then the third thing people tend to come in for is their sex drive. And because they have a reduction in their sex drive and they don't like that, and they want their sex drive to improve. You will see other symptoms. Some women, as I said, they get menorrhagia. In other words, they'll get a very heavy flow, or they'll get flow in between periods. Because as I said, when you don't have the progesterone holding that lining together, then you're going to get more flow. You're going to get more menstrual flow. And so that's not unusual to see women who are having very heavy periods, or, you know, just very heavy bleeding until they get their menopause, and then it tends to go away. And then whether you're having hot flashes or not, it can be harder to sleep. And what's lousy about that is that during your menopause, you tend to be more tired as you're losing your estrogen and progesterone. That all by itself makes you tired. And then the lower estrogen makes it so it's harder to sleep. So it's good times. It's really, yeah, what can I say? So what do you do about all this? And so the first thing, let's talk about, the first thing is, of course, take time to lean into it. You are in menopause and it's okay. The first thing to do is to go, you know what? I'm this age. I'm, you know, whatever age you are, 45, 46, 50. The average age to stop your periods is 51. And, you know, that I'm not your average person, but in that sense, I was at 51 years old was my last menses. And that was that. And so that was in 2015. It was a few years ago. And, you know, so far so good. What can I say? And I must say, I feel like I'm leveling out in terms of hormonally and mood wise. But it's not all gone because, of course, I'm a very busy person. I do a lot of stuff. So I have stress. And so I have to manage my stress all the time. And the thing I feel like I need the most of to help me with everything, including my menopause, is rest. I need more rest than I used to. I feel like I want to do less stuff. And the other thing you have to remember is that as you get older, you've lived more life. You've been in your life for a longer amount of time. And so it's nice to take time to look at what you've done and have more time to appreciate life and appreciate the life that you have led. So you need more time for quiet contemplation. And I feel like I need more time to synthesize what has gone on in my life. So just being down and quiet helps me, and it helps me to enjoy my life more. It will help me, of course, to have less menopausal symptoms and the less stressed you are. So if you're having a problem with your sex drive, if you spend some time de-stressing all by itself can help your sex drive, because nature doesn't like you to attempt to reproduce when you're apparently running away from a bear or running away from a marauding tribe. So if you have too much cortisol around, your body doesn't know that you're not running away from a bear or marauding tribe. It just thinks that that's what's going on. So you need to get away from the danger, whatever it is. But if you're constantly trying to get away from the danger, you're going to be cortisol dominant. And cortisol can be made directly from progesterone. So progesterone is something that if you have enough of it around, it promotes gestation and it can help you with your sex drive. And also cortisol will dominate androgens, your testosterone, your DHEA. And cortisol can be made from those things. So your body is going to be cortisol dominant, and you're not going to have as much going on with your reproductive hormones. So you're not going to have as much of a sex drive. So just chilling out can give you more of a sex drive, and because you can lie around, you can sleep. Think about how, you know, if you have a really nice morning, you have a nice partner, and you get to sleep in, and you're with your nice partner, you go and you brush your teeth, and then stuff happens because you're not stressed. You don't have too much to think about, and that's a nice time to enjoy each other and have your congress, if you will. But, you know, if you have high cortisol, that's the first thing to do, is to look at your stress. How are ways that you can lower your cortisol? What can you do to reduce your stress? And also, you have to be careful with what you eat. If you do too much sugar, sugar is going to tax your liver, and your liver won't be as available to manage hormones. Sugar can reduce your sex drive. So if you're reaching for sweets all the time, you might want to take a look at that and do some things to reduce the amount of sugar you crave. And maybe it's that you're not, you know, you're being too intense with your food and you're not eating enough protein and fat. And those are things to look at, because protein and fat are very satisfying. If you eat more protein, that can help your protein and fat both. If you eat healthy protein and healthy fat, they will both help your hormonal situation, and they might make it so that you don't crave sugar as much. So take a look at that. Make sure you're getting adequate protein in your diet, that you're having a bit of protein with every meal. Alcohol, forget about it, because one of the things that alcohol does, if you're doing too much alcohol, a little bit of alcohol can be healthful. And yet that's controversial. There are those who say that no amount of alcohol is healthful because it is taxing to the liver. So the way I feel about it, people have been drinking alcohol since they figured out that they could ferment stuff, or they picked up a plum from the ground that came from a tree that was, a little bit fermented and ate it and found out, whoa, this is doing something really interesting to me. And then they took the grape. They found that grapes would do the same thing. And then, you know, wine was invented in ancient times and people liked it back then. So, you know, I like to think that a little bit of alcohol is healthful. For some people, no amount of alcohol is healthful, of course, especially if you have problems with alcohol. But if you have too much alcohol, not good for your hormones. You know, if you're doing a glass of wine every day or a couple glasses of wine every day or more, you could have hormonal issues. And it's very simple. If the liver is taxed with detoxifying alcohol from you, which it will do, it goes stop the presses. I'm going to take this alcohol out of your body. If you are, if you're processing a lot of alcohol every day, you're going to be chewing through your B vitamins. And B vitamins are something that you need to manage your hormones. And it's not going to be as bioavailable. Your hormones are just not going to be as available because your body's busy processing the alcohol. And you're just not going to have, you know, as good hormonal production or management or metabolism or anything. So be aware of that. Caffeine. So the thing with caffeine, you know, everybody's like, I just have my one cup of coffee. I need to remind you that caffeine is a drug. And it's definitely a drug. It affects us. It's sort of an accepted drug that most people consume. And I am one of them. I do absolutely have at least a little bit of caffeine every day. Of course, my little bit of caffeine is less than a cup of coffee's worth of caffeine because I can't handle caffeine. But remember that caffeine's job is to put you into fight or flight. It's a phosphodiesterase inhibitor. So what that means is you don't break down your catecholamines as much. Your dopamine, your norepinephrine, your fight or flight hormones stay on board more. And what did we say about those fight or flight hormones? Fight or flight hormones will suppress reproductive function. So if you have enough caffeine, it might suppress your reproductive function. So if you have a many cup of coffee habit a day and you're having a sex drive problem, you might want to take a look at that. If you're a many cup of caffeine and your sex drive is fine, don't worry about it, because people vary. You do your 23andMe or your Ancestry.com, you can find out if you are a slow or fast caffeine metabolizer. I don't need to do 23andMe to tell you that I am a slow metabolizer, because a little goes a long way for me. Now, mind you, if you want to have some caffeine, you certainly can induce your caffeine breakdown enzymes, because, you know, I know that for me, if I stay away from caffeine completely and then I have a little bit, it goes a long way. And then if I have a little bit of caffeine every day, I'm inducing my breakdown enzymes so I can continue to handle a little bit of caffeine every day. But if I fluctuate the amount and I have all of a sudden I'm having two cups of coffee in a day, then my body can't handle it. I get headaches and I don't feel well. And of course, I'm going to be more in fight or flight and my reproductive hormones are not going to work as well. So I'm saying to you, if you have a sex drive issue and you are having more menopausal symptoms, look at your caffeine consumption. Do eat lots of clean produce, healthy food. If you eat your fruits and vegetables, you're going to get the fiber to help your, by the way, having good flora in your digestive system. Having good probiotics in your digestive system is going to help you manage your hormones as well. If you eat nuts and seeds, there are some people who do seed cycling, where they do flax. What is it? Let me see. A couple of the seeds are more progesteronic, where a couple of seeds are more estrogenic. I think it's that flax and chia are more estrogenic, whereas pumpkin and sunflower are more progesteronic. So the first part of the cycle they do the flax and chia, and the second part of the cycle they do the pumpkin and sunflower. And so that's something you can try if you want to. Nuts and seeds in general can help you with hormonal regulation, and they have a lot of fiber in them. And again, we talked about making sure you're getting good quality protein and getting good quality fat in your diet. And, you know, depending on whether you're vegetarian, you have to look at whether, you know, what your macros are going to be. If you want to be a vegetarian and you're vegetarian for emotional, spiritual, environmental reasons, make sure that it's still good for you to be a vegetarian. And, you know, because some vegetarians really need to have some animal protein on board. And if I disrespected you because you're like, I'm never having animal protein because I don't believe in it, that's fine. And then we can work with you and find other ways for you to get your protein. But I do have to say, there are some vegetarians who come in and they have a condition that's not going well because they're not eating animal protein. So, for example, if you're a vegetarian and you have keratosis pilaris, you know what keratosis pilaris is? Some of you do. Most of you probably don't. Okay. So feel the side of your arms, not if you're driving, but feel the side of your arm. When I say arm, I mean the top part of your upper extremity. Okay. So feel the outside of it. If you have any degree of rough, bumpy skin, those little bumpies that happen, that your hair follicles are sticking out a bit, you can have a tiny amount of that, and you can have really rough, bumpy skin. It's not classic eczema, but all the hair follicles on your arm, you can feel them. They're all bumpy. That is called keratosis pilaris. Keratosis pilaris is not terribly serious, although some people find it to be a cosmetic issue, and it can get itchy and inflamed. But when I see it, I tell people, look, you know, whatever you got going on, you have essential fatty acid deficiency, and you probably have a vitamin A deficiency as well. And if you're a vegetarian, so some vegetarians come in and they don't have it. So there's an enzyme called delta-6 desaturase, and delta-6 desaturase will convert plant oils into EPA and DHA, which are your active omega-3 fatty acids. And so not everybody has a well-functioning delta-6 desaturase enzyme. And so if you don't, and you don't eat any animal oils, because animal oils, whether you're eating fish or grass-fed beef or chicken that's been cleanly raised, they're going to have EPA and DHA in them already made, because you have EPA and DHA and you already made, so mammals make it on their own. But if you are not eating any of that stuff and your delta-6 desaturase doesn't work well, you're going to have inflammation in your body. And the inflammation that's on your skin is a harbinger of the other inflammation that can be happening other places in your body. So it's something to look at. And what I do is, if the person still, you know, refuses to eat animal protein or animal fat, we try to find them vegan sources of EPA and DHA, which can be synthesized from algae. And you're not going to get as high an amount, but, you know, you may get some. So that's how we look at that. If you aren't a vegetarian, then essential fatty acids can be very helpful. They can help you make more hormones. They can help you to be calmer. They can help your brain to function better, help you in a lot of ways. So the other thing is de-stress. We said it again. And so, of course, finding that time to just sit and breathe and just be. But then all of your, stress-reducing activities, whether it's getting treated, get a spa treatment, get a massage, go have acupuncture, go to church, go to synagogue, go to yoga class, go to Tai Chi. Do any of these things in your home. You don't have to, if you need to be home for whatever reason, like you have children or it's bad weather or whatever, if you have internet, all of these things can be available to you. Meditation, church, yoga, exercise, you can get them all online, and a lot of times for no charge. So those are things to find. You can also get apps like Mind Body, and there are other, you know, apps that have meditation in them that you can get, and people use them. and they find them very helpful. And so, you know, they'll have meditations on them that you can use. So there's an app called Headspace, and there's another one called Calm. And there are mindfulness apps that you can find, and you can find them on the iTunes Store, and you can find them on the Google Play Store. So find them for your phone, and then you'll have something to help calm you down anywhere you go. You know, get your headphones out or your earbuds or whatever you have with your phone, and off you go. It can be very nice. So de-stressing anytime, wherever you go. Now, if you want to know what you can take, well, for hot flashes, there's different things that we give. A common herb that we give is black cohosh, and black cohosh is not a phytoestrogen, so it doesn't have actual estrogenic hormones and things that simulate your estrogen receptors. It's more of an anti-inflammatory. And in fact, inflammation can take you to hot flashes. The more inflammation you have, the more hot flashes you're going to tend to have, probably because your sympathetic nervous system is going to be agitated when you have inflammation. So something that's a nice anti-inflammatory is going to help. That's why evening primrose oil and borage oil also help. And by the way, those are two nice herbs that are plants that have lovely oils that come from the seeds that have gamma linolenic acid in them. And gamma linolenic acid is a great precursor to anti-inflammatory compounds in your body, to eicosanoids, prostaglandins that reduce inflammation in your body. Lovely herbs like dong quai and wild yam. Dong quai tends to be more of a phytoestrogenic herb, whereas wild yam tends to stimulate progesterone receptors. And wild yam can be used to make actual progesterone. Whether you make progesterone from you taking the herb wild yam, you probably don't. That when they use wild yam to make progesterone, what they usually do is they use special bacteria that convert the diastogen in the wild yam to make progesterone. And if people's symptoms are bad enough, we use hormones. So I'll backtrack to talk about the hormones. But first, let's talk about the non-hormonal things. So vaginal dryness is huge, you know, and that it can be very uncomfortable. Of course, if a woman can't enjoy her sex, that's no fun. So the first thing I often recommend is vitamin E oil. And vitamin E oil, you can take a vitamin E capsule and break it and apply it topically. And you can also get actual vitamin E oil or cream and apply that topically. Aloe also can be applied topically and can be very soothing and healing to your vulvar and vaginal tissues. Coconut oil is controversial. The thing about coconut oil is it's very easy to use. It's very easy to get. The prices come down considerably. And it has a lot of staying power. It's a plant oil and it has a lot of staying power. The issue is one of the good things about coconut oil can be one of the difficult things about coconut oil. And that is that coconut oil has lovely compounds in it that are antimicrobial. You take coconut oil. Coconut oil is something that you can take to kill microorganisms. It can kill bacteria, it can kill viruses, and it can kill yeast. So we use coconut oil preparations to help people get rid of their yeast infections. But it can kill bacteria. So you have to have nice flora in your vagina in order to maintain good vaginal health. So coconut oil can kill it. So if you use too much coconut oil, that can be an issue. Now, if you're using coconut oil and you're using it as a lube or you're using it to soothe your vaginal tissues and it's working great, don't worry about it. But if you are using it and then you're finding you're getting more yeast infections, that can happen because even though it can kill yeast, it can also kill the good bacteria that keep the yeast at bay. So be careful of that. You can get probiotics for women, and there are certain strains that can help, like Lactobacillus gessarii. Lactobacillus gessarii is a neat strain that both can help with good vaginal health and also help you to be at a lighter weight. And so there are a couple of companies that make a women's probiotic, and that's one of the probiotics in it. There was a lactobacillus species and a reuteri species that were being used. And then they found that women who have healthy vaginal tissue, they found that there were four strains that were that were found in most healthy vaginal tissue. And one of them was Lactobacillus gaseri. It looks like gaseri. It's so cute. Lactobacillus gaseri or Lactobacillus gaseri. I'm not sure. But there's four strains in this very special probiotic that can be really helpful for women. And so let me see if I can find them. Okay, so the four strains are Lactobacillus crispatus, Lactobacillus gaseri, Lactobacillus jensenii, and Lactobacillus rhamnosus. And previously, there was another couple of strains that were in the Good Women's Probiotic, but these four are found in women's vaginas who have very healthy vaginal tissue. And no, you don't have to put it in your vagina. You eat it. It's great. You take a pill and you swallow it, just one a day, and it can be really helpful. It's great. And so how does that even work? Well, you swallow it, and of course it gets into your stool, and then, you know, when it gets down to your, when you go to the bathroom, the probiotics take a walk, and they go to your vagina, and off you go. So that's how it works, because you don't have to take it. You don't have to insert this vaginally. It's great. All right, so that helps as well. Then Swedish flower pollen extract is something that can help both with vaginal dryness as well as hot flashes. And then sex drive stuff, the herbs that we tend to use, we try to use tribulus and damiana. And also I have to remind you that getting rest will increase your androgens and give you a better sex drive, as we talked about before, and weightlifting, because when you increase muscle mass, the act of lifting weights actually increases your androgens right away. So if you want to have a fun evening, go do some weightlifting in the afternoon. It actually works. It can work right away. And the other fun thing would be to do some resistance training with your honey and do that together with the intention that you're getting sexy, and then go home and get sexy, or don't wait till you get home, whatever works for you. But just know that if you do resistance training, it can help you with your testosterone right away. And I'm going to say that doing a yoga class, especially if it's at least a moderate yoga class as opposed to just a gentle, although the gentle one can help too. Yoga in general can help, because why? You're breathing and you're relaxing. So if you do a gentle class, it can help your sex drive, because you're going to reduce your stress in that class and you're going to do some nice stretching. If you do a moderate or above, you will relax in that class, because you always finish with Shavasana, of course. And, you know, you hold poses and things like that, but you're also doing strength training if you're doing a moderate or a vigorous class. So yoga all by itself can help with sex drive. The other thing is that when you're doing the asanas of yoga, you're putting yourself into very healing positions in your body, so you're encouraging circulation to all of the parts of your body, and you're helping to realign your chakras. And when you do that, of course, your sex drive is going to improve. All right, some of you are getting menorrhagia and you're bleeding too much and you want to stop. What are you going to do about that? Well, there's a product that my professor put together that has wonderful things in it. It has vitamin A. High dose vitamin A can help to slow down bleeding. So can vitamin C, vitamin K1, and bioflavonoids. And then the herbs ginger, cranesbill, periwinkle, yarrow, life root, and shepherd's purse. They can all be helpful separately and together. And there is a combination that you can get that really tends to shut down excessive bleeding, because it has all those nice things in it. You can try straight up vitamin A, and you can try straight up vitamin K1, but that combination, I love using it. Stuff you can do to help you sleep. So you can take nerving herbs like your valerian and your passion flower and your chamomile and linden and skullcap. Those are all great nerving herbs. Oat straw, those all can be helpful. You can get combinations of those in various teas that you can get, and you can get tinctures, you can get glycerides. If you don't have enough magnesium on board, you're probably going to be more stressed in general. And magnesium comes from eating green vegetables. If you don't eat a lot of green vegetables, you might not get enough magnesium. And if you eat too much sugar, you'll deplete your magnesium, because you need magnesium to regulate sugar. And so you could take magnesium pills or do natural calm or, you know, some powdered combination that has magnesium in it. Again, if you want to sleep, watch your sugar, your caffeine, and your alcohol. I like GABA preparations. They tend to help people with sleep. And I've been tending to use that more because it's, you know, when people are very stressed and they just need an interruption of all their stress, GABA preparations tend to work nicely. GABA is gamma-aminobutyric acid, and it's an inhibitory neurotransmitter. So it can be really helpful. Also, you know, shout out to ITI who produces a compound that's an extract of lavender, like a lavender concentrate. And for some people, that lavender works very nicely. And you can take, there are lavender pills that you can take that are, work as a nerving and help you to be calmer. And then you can also use lavender essential oil, good quality lavender essential oil that can help to, you can spray it on your pillow, you can use lotions, you can use a diffuser and diffuse it into the air. I know that because I use hand sanitizer in my practice. Before I touch you, I always want to sanitize your hands, and I always want to watch me do it because I want you to see me using the hand sanitizer so you know that my hands are going to be clean when I touch you. So the hand sanitizer I use, unless the person doesn't like lavender, it has lavender, and I do have an unscented one, but I like to use the lavender because one of the first things that happens is my patients walk into my office and go, "It smells so good in here." And they don't say it like, "Oh, it kind of smells nice." They're like it's doing something to them. And so when I see them do that, I suggest to them that they want to have lavender in their house because the lavender's obviously making them calm down and happy. So it might do that for you. It's a great basic essential oil, essential oil 101. Unless you're somebody that doesn't care for lavender, not everybody jives with lavender. I happen to love it, like real fresh lavender. And when I use the essential oil, the hand sanitizer, I find it so refreshing. It is a mint. It's in the mint family. So it's got that refreshing quality that mints tend to have. I just love it. So lavender can help you with your menopause. It can help you sleep. All right, homeopathy. So there's neat homeopathic remedies. I like to use homeopathy sometimes, and especially if I feel that a remedy is definitely going to help you. Homeopathic sepia is a classic one for that feeling of, "I want to be alone. I love you, honey, but get away from me. Don't touch me." When you have that feeling, the careworn woman is taking care of everyone but herself and she's exhausted. Homeopathic sepia can be helpful for that. Pulsatilla can be very helpful when you feel sad and you feel demanding, but you also feel sad and weepy. And when you get snuggled and cuddled, you feel better. Folliculinum, one of the things about menopause is, you know, you have questions about who you are as a woman because you're leaving your reproductive years. And that can give you questions about who you are as a person. Have you lived the life you want to live? Are you taking care of everybody except for yourself? Do you feel like a doormat? Are you, when you have grand questions about who you are as a woman and you feel like you're being pulled apart and you don't know who you are and your identity as a woman is in question, homeopathic folliculinum can be really helpful for that. And it's a homeopathic remedy that's made from basically ovarian tissue. It's really neat and it can be a very helpful and useful remedy. So I talked about a lot of natural things that can be helpful for menopause, and as often happens, I didn't get to talk about natural hormone replacement therapy. So I think I'm going to do, I've probably talked about that before, but it definitely is worth talking about again. So I think I'm going to go there next week. So if you listen next week, I'll talk about, actually, you know what? Maybe I won't do that. Maybe we'll do that in 2 weeks because what I think I want to do is, this evening, if you're curious, there's going to be a love, or not this evening, it's at 2:00 this afternoon. 2:00 this afternoon at the Betty Tipton Room at Eastern Connecticut State University. There's going to be a neat panel, a lecture, and it's all about natural alternatives to pain management. And there's going to be this really cool panelist there who's presenting some nice slides, and her name is me. So I'm going to be there. So I'm not sure if this event is going to be taped, but you would think it would be because it would make a nice TED Talk style thing. So I think what I'll do next week is I'll do a recap of that. So if I could get to it, I'll talk about natural hormones. But if I don't, I will do the natural hormones. in 2 weeks. So you should keep listening to Radio Naturopath. It's good to listen to Radio Naturopath anyway. I'm very happy to be here to help you and support you in getting more information about natural health. But I'm going to go now, and I'm going to play a previous episode of Bicycle Talk because Ron is not here. So when you're listening to Bicycle Talk, it will be me, but it will be pre-recorded. Anyway, you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I'm Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. My co-host with Ron Meniza is away this week. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM. WHUS Stores.